Thank you for being an incredible supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, the home of the skillful art of manipulation. We're thrilled to have you as part of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes and comments mean the world to us and help us reach a wider audience with our stories. Plus, with new episodes released every day, your feedback plays a vital role in shaping what we create. It truly makes a difference. Your loyalty and enthusiasm fuel our passion for crafting gripping tales, and we're so grateful for your support. Today, we're excited to present The Betrayal List, a story that promises to keep you on the edge of your seat. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, The Discovery. I've always believed that trust is the foundation of any relationship. Without it, you're just two people orbiting each other, never truly connecting. Marcus had been my best friend for over a decade, the kind of friend who felt more like a brother. We'd been through everything together: high school drama, college parties, failed relationships, and even the occasional brush with the law. He was the guy I called at 3 a.m. when I needed someone to bail me out of trouble, and I was the one he turned to when his world was falling apart. Or at least, that's what I thought. It was a Tuesday evening when everything changed. The kind of evening that starts out mundane and ends with your life unraveling. Marcus had called me earlier that day, his voice casual, but with that undercurrent of urgency I'd come to recognize over the years. "Hey man, I need a favor. Can you swing by my place later? I left an important file in my study, and I'm stuck in a meeting. Just grab it for me, will you?" I didn't think twice. That's the kind of friendship we had. No questions asked, no explanations needed. I told him I'd take care of it, and he gave me the code to his security system. "You're a lifesaver," he said before hanging up. I arrived at his house around 7 p.m., the sun just beginning to dip below the horizon. Marcus lived in a sleek, modern house in the kind of neighborhood where everyone drove luxury cars and pretended not to notice each other. I punched in the code and let myself in, the familiar scent of his cologne hitting me as soon as I stepped inside. The house was quiet, the kind of quiet that feels heavy, like it's waiting for something to happen. I made my way to his study, a room I'd been in countless times before. It was exactly as I remembered it: bookshelves lined with leather-bound books he never read, a mahogany desk cluttered with papers, and a single-framed photo of the two of us from our college days. We looked so young in that picture, so carefree. I couldn't help but smile as I glanced at it, but the smile didn't last long. The file Marcus needed was supposed to be on his desk, but it wasn't. I sighed, running a hand through my hair as I started rifling through the mess of papers. That's when I saw it, a folded sheet of paper tucked beneath a stack of documents. It was out of place, too deliberate to be accidental. My curiosity got the better of me, and I unfolded it. What I saw made my blood run cold. It was a list of names, written in Marcus's familiar handwriting. At first, I thought it was just a random list, maybe people he needed to call or business contacts. But then I noticed the annotations next to each name: dates, locations, and one word, repeated over and over: eliminate. My heart started pounding, a dull thud in my chest that grew louder with every second. I scanned the list, my eyes darting from one name to the next. Some of them I recognized: Sarah Thompson, an old college friend; David Reynolds, a guy Marcus had done business with; a few others I'd heard him mention in passing. And then, at the bottom of the list, I saw it. My name. I stared at it, my mind struggling to process what I was seeing. My name. Marcus wanted to eliminate me. The room seemed to tilt, the walls closing in as I tried to make sense of it. How could this be happening? Marcus was my best friend. We'd been through everything together. He was the guy who'd stood by me when no one else would. And now this. I felt a cold sweat break out on my forehead, my hands trembling as I gripped the paper. My mind raced, trying to piece together what this meant. Was this some kind of joke? A twisted prank? But deep down, I knew it wasn't. Marcus wasn't the kind of guy who joked about things like this. He was calculated, methodical. If his name was on that list, it was because he'd put it there. I folded the paper and shoved it back where I'd found it, my heart still pounding. I needed to think, to figure out what to do next. But first, I had to act normal. Marcus couldn't suspect that I knew. I grabbed the file he'd asked for and left the study, my mind racing. The drive home was a blur. I kept replaying the list in my head, the names, the annotations, the word eliminate. What did it mean? Was Marcus planning to kill these people? And if so, why? What had they done to deserve that? What had I done? By the time I got home, I was a mess. I poured myself a drink, my hands still shaking as I raised the glass to my lips. The whiskey burned going down, but it did nothing to calm my nerves. I needed to talk to someone, but who? I couldn't go to the police, not without proof. And I couldn't confront Marcus. Not yet. Not until I knew what I was dealing with. I spent the rest of the night pacing my apartment, my mind spinning with possibilities. Maybe it was a misunderstanding. Maybe Marcus was being blackmailed. Or maybe he wasn't the person I thought he was. Maybe our entire friendship had been a lie. The thought made me sick to my stomach. I thought about all the times Marcus had been there for me, all the times I'd trusted him with my life. Had it all been an act? Had he been manipulating me this whole time? I didn't want to believe it, but the evidence was right there in black and white. My name was on that list. Marcus wanted me dead, and if I didn't figure out why, I might not live to see another Tuesday. That night, I lay in bed, staring at the ceiling. Sleep was impossible. My mind was a whirlwind of fear and confusion, every thought leading to more questions than answers. I replayed every interaction with Marcus, searching for signs I might have missed. Had he always been this way? Had there been moments when his mask slipped, revealing the monster underneath? I thought about the time he'd convinced me to invest in one of his business ventures, only for it to fall apart months later. I'd lost a lot of money, but Marcus had walked away unscathed. At the time, I'd chalked it up to bad luck. But now I wasn't so sure. I thought about the way he'd always been so charming, so persuasive. He had a way of making you feel like you were the most important person in the room, like he genuinely cared about you. But was it real? Or was it just another manipulation, another way to keep people under his thumb? I didn't know. And that was the worst part. I didn't know who Marcus really was, or what he was capable of. But I knew one thing, I couldn't let him win. If he wanted me dead, I wasn't going to make it easy for him. I needed a plan. I needed to outsmart him, to stay one step ahead. But how? Marcus was cunning, manipulative, and always seemed to be two steps ahead of everyone else. I had to be careful, very careful. As the first rays of sunlight crept through my window, I made a decision. I would play along, act like nothing was wrong. I would continue to be the loyal friend Marcus thought I was. But behind the scenes, I would dig. I would find out what he was planning, and I would stop him. Because if I didn't, I was as good as dead. Chapter 2, The Plan. The morning after I found the list, I woke up with a pounding headache and a sense of dread that clung to me like a second skin. I hadn't slept much, my mind too busy racing through every possible scenario, every potential move Marcus could make. I felt like a chess player staring at a board where all the pieces were invisible, and I was just waiting for the first strike. I dragged myself out of bed and into the shower, letting the hot water scald my skin as I tried to wash away the unease. It didn't work. The list was burned into my brain, each name etched into my memory like a brand. Sarah Thompson, David Reynolds, and me, always me, at the bottom of the page, marked for elimination. I needed to do something, but I couldn't just charge in blindly. Marcus was too smart, too calculated. If I made one wrong move, he'd know I was onto him, and that would be the end of me. I had to be smarter, more careful. I had to play the long game. I decided to start with Sarah. She was the first name on the list, and I knew her well enough to reach out without raising suspicion. We hadn't spoken much since college, but we'd always been friendly. If anyone could give me insight into why Marcus would want her dead, it was her. I sent her a text, keeping my tone casual. "Hey Sarah, it's been a while. How about we grab coffee this week? I'd love to catch up." She responded almost immediately, agreeing to meet me the next day at a cafe downtown. I felt a small flicker of hope. This was a start. The cafe was one of those trendy places with exposed brick walls and overpriced lattes. I arrived early, choosing a table in the corner where I could see the entrance. I didn't know what to expect, but I wanted to be prepared. I ordered a black coffee and waited, my leg bouncing nervously under the table. Sarah walked in a few minutes later, looking exactly as I remembered her, tall, confident, with a smile that could light up a room. She spotted me and waved, weaving through the tables to join me. "It's been forever," she said, pulling me into a quick hug before sitting down. "How have you been?" "Good, good," I lied, forcing a smile. "Just busy with work, you know how it is." We made small talk for a few minutes, catching up on the surface-level stuff, jobs, mutual friends, the usual. But I could tell something was off. There was a tension in her voice, a guardedness that hadn't been there before. I decided to steer the conversation toward Marcus. "So, have you talked to Marcus lately?" I asked, trying to sound casual. Her expression darkened almost immediately. "Marcus? Yeah, I've talked to him." Not that it was a pleasant conversation. "What do you mean?" I asked, leaning forward slightly. She sighed, stirring her coffee absently. "We had a falling out a few months ago. He accused me of stealing from him during a business deal. Can you believe that? Me stealing from him? I've known the guy for years, and he has the nerve to accuse me of something like that." I felt a chill run down my spine. This was exactly the kind of thing I'd been afraid of. Marcus had a history of turning on people when he felt wronged, real or imagined. But this was different. This wasn't just cutting someone out of his life. This was marking them for elimination. "What happened?" I asked, keeping my voice steady. "He cut me off," she said, her tone bitter. "Completely. No explanation, no chance to defend myself. Just gone. And then I started hearing rumors. People saying I was untrustworthy, that I'd screwed him over. It's been a nightmare." I nodded, my mind racing. This was worse than I'd thought. Marcus wasn't just eliminating threats. He was destroying people's lives, their reputations. And if Sarah was on the list, it was only a matter of time before he made his move. "I'm sorry," I said, and I meant it. That's really messed up." She shrugged, but I could see the hurt in her eyes. "Yeah, well, what can you do? Some people just change, I guess." We talked for a little while longer, but I could tell she was done with the subject. I didn't push it. I'd gotten what I needed. Marcus had turned on Sarah, and now she was on his list. The question was, why? What had she done to deserve that? And more importantly, what had I done? After leaving the cafe, I decided to dig deeper. I needed to know more about the other names on the list, especially David Reynolds. He was next on the list, and if Marcus had a pattern, I needed to understand it. David was an old friend of Marcus's, someone he'd known for years. They'd done business together, invested in projects, and from what I'd heard, they'd been close. But if Marcus had turned on Sarah, it wasn't a stretch to think he'd turned on David too. I reached out to David, using the same casual approach I'd taken with Sarah. He agreed to meet me for a drink that evening at a bar near his office. I spent the rest of the day preparing, trying to anticipate what I might learn and how I could use it. The bar was dimly lit, the kind of place where deals were made and secrets were spilled. David was already there when I arrived, sitting at a corner table with a glass of whiskey in front of him. He looked older than I remembered, his hair graying at the temples, but his eyes were as sharp as ever. "Long time no see," he said, shaking my hand as I sat down. "What brings you out tonight?" "Just wanted to catch up," I said, signaling the waiter for a drink. "It's been a while." We made small talk for a few minutes, but I could tell David wasn't one for chit-chat. He got straight to the point. "So, what's really going on? You didn't call me out of the blue, just to shoot the breeze." I hesitated, then decided to take a risk. "I need to ask you about Marcus." His expression darkened, and he took a long sip of his whiskey before answering. "Marcus. What about him?" "I think he's in trouble," I said, choosing my words carefully. "And I think you might be too." David leaned back in his chair, studying me with a mixture of curiosity and suspicion. "What do you mean?" I took a deep breath. "I found something. A list. Names of people Marcus is planning to eliminate. And your name is on it." For a moment, David just stared at me, his face unreadable. Then he laughed, a harsh, bitter sound. "Of course it is. That son of a bitch. What do you mean?" I asked, leaning forward. David shook his head, his expression grim. "Marcus and I had a falling out a while back. He accused me of betraying him, of working against him. He said I was a liability, that I knew too much. I thought he was just being paranoid, but now I'm not so sure." "What did you do?" I asked, my voice barely above a whisper. "Nothing," David said, his tone sharp. "That's the thing. I didn't do anything. But Marcus, he's always been like this. If he thinks you're a threat, he'll cut you out. No questions asked." I felt a chill run down my spine. This was exactly what I'd been afraid of. Marcus wasn't just eliminating threats. He was eliminating anyone who might pose a threat, real or imagined. And if David was on the list, it was only a matter of time before Marcus made his move. "What are you going to do?" I asked. David shrugged, but I could see the fear in his eyes. "What can I do? Marcus is powerful. If he wants me gone, I'm as good as dead." I left the bar that night with a sinking feeling in my stomach. Marcus's list wasn't just a list. It was a death sentence. And if I didn't do something, I'd be next. I needed a plan, but I couldn't do it alone. I needed allies, people who could help me take Marcus down. But who could I trust? Everyone on the list was a potential target, and anyone else might already be under Marcus's thumb. As I walked home, my mind raced with possibilities. I needed to be smart, to stay one step ahead. But most of all, I needed to be careful. Because if Marcus found out what I was doing, I was as good as dead. Chapter 3: The Web of Lies. The days following my meetings with Sarah and David were a blur of paranoia and sleepless nights. Every time my phone buzzed, my heart would leap into my throat, half expecting it to be Marcus, somehow knowing what I was up to. But he didn't call. He didn't text. It was radio silence, and that somehow made it worse. Silence from Marcus wasn't comforting, it was ominous. It meant he was planning something, and I was running out of time to figure out what. I spent hours poring over the list, trying to find a pattern, a connection between the names. Sarah, David, and the others, what did they have in common? Why had Marcus marked them for elimination? And why was I on that list? I couldn't shake the feeling that there was something bigger at play here, something I wasn't seeing. I decided to dig deeper into the other names on the list. There were 5 in total, including me. Sarah and David were the only ones I knew personally, but the other 2, Elena Martinez and James Carter, were strangers to me. I needed to find out who they were, and why Marcus wanted them gone. I started with Elena Martinez. A quick online search revealed that she was a journalist, one of those investigative types who dug into corporate scandals and political corruption. Her name had popped up in a few high-profile cases, and she'd built a reputation for being relentless. If Marcus had her on his list, it wasn't hard to guess why. She must have been digging into something he didn't want exposed. I reached out to her under the guise of being a source, claiming I had information about a story she was working on. She agreed to meet me at a coffee shop near her office, and I spent the night before rehearsing what I would say. I had to be careful. If she suspected I was lying, she'd shut me down, and I'd lose my chance to get answers. The coffee shop was crowded, the air thick with the smell of espresso and the hum of conversation. I spotted Elena immediately. She was sitting at a corner table, her laptop open in front of her, her dark hair pulled back into a no-nonsense ponytail. She looked exactly like her photos, sharp, focused, and not someone you'd want to cross. I approached her table, forcing a smile. "Elena, I'm the one who emailed you." She looked up, her eyes narrowing slightly as she studied me. "You said you had information for me. Let's hear it." I sat down, my heart pounding. "It's about Marcus Reynolds." Her expression didn't change, but I saw a flicker of interest in her eyes. "What about him?" I took a deep breath. "I think he's involved in something dangerous. And I think you might be in danger because of it." She leaned back in her chair, crossing her arms over her chest. "You're going to have to be more specific than that." I hesitated, then decided to go all in. "I found a list of names, people Marcus is planning to eliminate, and your name is on it." For a moment, she just stared at me, her face unreadable. Then she laughed, a short, humorless sound. "Let me guess. You're on the list too." I nodded, my stomach twisting. "Yeah, I am." She sighed, closing her laptop and leaning forward. "Listen, I don't know who you are or what your angle is, but if you're trying to scare me, it's not going to work. I've been doing this job long enough to know when someone's feeding me a line." "I'm not lying," I said, my voice rising slightly. "Marcus is dangerous. If he's targeting you, it's because you're a threat to him. And if you don't believe me, ask Sarah Thompson or David Reynolds. They're on the list too." Her expression shifted, and I could see the wheels turning in her head. "Sarah Thompson. I know that name. She was involved in a business deal with Marcus a while back. It fell apart, and he blamed her for it." "Exactly," I said, seizing the opportunity. "Marcus doesn't just cut people out of his life. He destroys them. And if you're on his list, it's because he sees you as a threat." She was silent for a long moment, her eyes searching mine. Finally, she spoke. "All right. Let's say I believe you. What do you want from me?" "I want to stop him," I said, my voice low. "But I can't do it alone. I need your help." She studied me for a moment longer, then nodded. "All right. I'm in. But if this is some kind of setup, I'll make sure you regret it." With Elena on board, I felt a small flicker of hope. She was smart, resourceful, and had access to information I could only dream of. If anyone could help me uncover Marcus's secrets, it was her. Next on the list was James Carter. I didn't know much about him, but a quick search revealed that he was a private investigator, the kind of guy who specialized in digging up dirt on people. If Marcus had him on his list, it was probably because he knew too much. I reached out to James under the guise of needing his services, claiming I had a case I wanted him to look into. He agreed to meet me at his office, a small, nondescript building on the outskirts of town. When I arrived, he was waiting for me, his expression guarded. He was a big guy, with a shaved head and a no-nonsense demeanor. He didn't offer me a seat, just crossed his arms and said, "What's this about?" I decided to cut to the chase. "It's about Marcus Reynolds." His expression didn't change, but I saw a flicker of something in his eyes, fear maybe, or anger. "What about him?" "I think he's planning to kill you," I said, watching his reaction closely. For a moment, he just stared at me, his face unreadable. Then he laughed, a harsh, bitter sound. "Yeah, well, he's not the first." "What do you mean?" I asked, my heart pounding. He sighed, running a hand over his head. "Marcus and I have a history. I did some work for him a while back, digging up dirt on some of his business rivals. But then I found out some things, things he didn't want me to know. He cut me loose, threatened me if I ever talked. I thought that was the end of it, but I guess I was wrong. What did you find out?" I asked, leaning forward. He shook his head. "Not here. Not now. If Marcus is really coming after me, I need to be careful. But if you're serious about taking him down, I'm in. I've got enough dirt on that guy to bury him." By the time I left James's office, I felt like I was finally getting somewhere. I had allies now, Sarah, David, Elena, and James. Together, we might have a chance at stopping Marcus. But I couldn't shake the feeling that we were still missing something, some piece of the puzzle that would make everything fall into place. That night, I sat in my apartment, staring at the list. The names stared back at me, taunting me. Sarah, David, Elena, James, and me. What did we have in common? Why had Marcus marked us for elimination? And then it hit me. We all knew too much. Sarah knew about his business dealings. David knew about his secrets. Elena was digging into his past. James had dirt on him. And me. I knew him better than anyone. I knew his weaknesses, his fears, his lies. Marcus wasn't just eliminating threats. He was eliminating anyone who could expose him. And if that was true, then the list wasn't just a death sentence. It was a blueprint for his downfall. But I had to be careful. Marcus was always two steps ahead, and if he found out what I was doing, he'd make sure I never saw the end of his plan. I needed to stay one step ahead, to outsmart him at his own game. Because if I didn't, I was as good as dead. Chapter 4, The Trap. The plan was set. After weeks of digging, strategizing, and sleepless nights, we were finally ready to take Marcus down. Sarah, David, Elena, James, and I had formed an uneasy alliance, bound together by our shared fear of Marcus and our determination to stop him. But trust was in short supply. We all knew Marcus was a master manipulator, and the possibility that one of us might be playing both sides loomed over every conversation. The plan was simple, at least on paper. We would lure Marcus into a situation where he would reveal his true intentions, and we would record everything. With enough evidence, we could take him to the authorities and end his reign of terror. But executing the plan was anything but simple. Marcus was cunning, paranoid, and always one step ahead. If he suspected a trap, he would turn the tables on us in an instant. The location we chose was an abandoned warehouse on the outskirts of town. It was isolated, quiet, and far enough from prying eyes to give us the privacy we needed. James had scouted the place earlier in the week, confirming that it was empty and secure. We set up hidden cameras and microphones, ensuring that every angle was covered. If Marcus said or did anything incriminating, we would have it on record. The night of the trap, I was a bundle of nerves. I arrived at the warehouse early, my hands trembling as I checked the equipment one last time. Sarah and David were already there, their faces tense with anticipation. Elena and James arrived shortly after, their expressions equally grim. "Is everything ready?" Elena asked, her voice low. I nodded, though I wasn't sure if I was trying to convince her or myself. "As ready as it's going to be. Once Marcus gets here, we'll stick to the plan. No deviations." Sarah crossed her arms, her eyes darting around the room. "And if he doesn't take the bait? What then?" "Then we're screwed," James said bluntly. "But we don't have a choice. If we don't do this, he's going to come after us one by one. This is our only shot." I couldn't argue with that. Marcus had already proven that he was willing to do whatever it took to eliminate anyone he saw as a threat. If we didn't stop him now, we might not get another chance. We took our positions, hiding in the shadows as we waited for Marcus to arrive. The minutes dragged by, each one feeling like an eternity. My heart pounded in my chest, and I could feel the sweat trickling down my back. I kept replaying the plan in my head, trying to anticipate every possible outcome. But no matter how many times I went over it, I couldn't shake the feeling that something was going to go wrong. Finally, the sound of a car engine broke the silence. I peered through a crack in the wall, watching as Marcus's sleek black sedan pulled up to the warehouse. He stepped out, his movements calm and deliberate, as if he didn't have a care in the world. He was dressed in a tailored suit, his hair perfectly styled, and he carried himself with the confidence of a man who knew he was in control. I felt a surge of anger as I watched him. How could he be so calm, so composed, after everything he'd done? How could he betray the people who had trusted him, who had stood by him through thick and thin? Marcus entered the warehouse, his footsteps echoing in the empty space. He glanced around, his expression unreadable. "Hello," he called out, his voice smooth and confident. "Anyone here?" I took a deep breath, then stepped out of the shadows. "Marcus." He turned to face me, a faint smile playing on his lips. "There you are. I was starting to think you'd stood me up." "I wouldn't miss this for the world," I said, my voice steady despite the fear coursing through me. He tilted his head, studying me with those piercing eyes. "So what's this about? You said you had something important to discuss." I nodded, forcing myself to stay calm. "I do. But before we get into that, there's something you need to know." "Oh," he said, his tone light but with an edge of curiosity. "And what's that?" I took a step closer, my heart pounding. "I know about the list, Marcus. I know what you're planning." For a moment, he just stared at me, his expression unreadable. Then he laughed a low, chilling sound that sent a shiver down my spine. "The list? What list?" "Don't play dumb," I said, my voice rising. "I found it. I know you're planning to kill me, to kill all of us. Sarah, David, Elena, James, they're all on your list. And so am I." His smile faded, replaced by a cold, calculating expression. "Ah, so you found it. I was wondering when you'd figure it out." I felt a surge of anger, but I forced myself to stay calm. "Why, Marcus? Why would you do this? We're your friends. We trusted you." He took a step closer, his eyes locked on mine. "Friends. Trust. Don't make me laugh. You think this is about friendship? This is about survival. About power. And if you're too blind to see that, then you're even more pathetic than I thought." I clenched my fists, my nails digging into my palms. "You're insane. You've lost your mind." He shook his head, his expression almost pitying. "No, my friend. I've never been more clear-headed. You see, in this world, there are predators and there are prey. And I have no intention of being the latter." Before I could respond, there was a loud bang, and the lights in the warehouse flickered. I turned to see Sarah, David, Elena, and James emerging from their hiding places, their faces tense with determination. "It's over, Marcus," Sarah said, her voice shaking but firm. "We've got everything on record. You're finished." Marcus glanced around, his expression calm but with a flicker of something darker in his eyes. "Ah, so this is a trap. I should have known." "You're under arrest," James said, stepping forward with a pair of handcuffs. "Anything you say can and will be used against you." For a moment, Marcus just stood there, his eyes darting between us. Then he smiled, a cold, cruel smile that sent a chill down my spine. "You really think it's going to be that easy?" Before anyone could react, he pulled a gun from his jacket and pointed it at me. "Drop the cameras. Now." I froze, my heart pounding in my chest. This wasn't part of the plan. This wasn't supposed to happen. "Do it," Marcus said, his voice low and dangerous. "Or I'll put a bullet in his head." Sarah hesitated, then slowly lowered the camera. David and Elena did the same, their faces pale with fear. Marcus nodded, his smile widening. "Good. Now let's talk." The next few minutes were a blur. Marcus kept the gun trained on me as he laid out his terms. He wanted the recordings, the evidence, everything we had on him. And if we didn't comply, he would kill me. I could see the fear in my friend's eyes, the hesitation as they weighed their options. But I knew we couldn't give in. If we let Marcus walk away, he would come back stronger, more dangerous. We had to stand our ground. "Do it," I said, my voice barely above a whisper. "Don't let him win." Marcus's expression darkened, and he tightened his grip on the gun. "You really think you're in a position to make demands?" Before I could respond, there was a loud bang, and Marcus crumpled to the ground. I turned to see Sarah holding a gun, her hands trembling, but her eyes filled with determination. "It's over," she said, her voice shaking. "It's finally over." As the police arrived and took Marcus away, I felt a strange mix of relief and sadness. The nightmare was over, but the scars would remain. Marcus had betrayed us, manipulated us, and tried to destroy us. But in the end, we had outsmarted him. As I stood there, watching the flashing lights of the police cars, I couldn't help but wonder if we had really won. Marcus was gone, but the damage he had done would take a long time to heal. And as I looked at my friends, their faces pale and drawn, I knew that none of us would ever be the same. But we had survived. And for now, that was enough. Chapter 5, The Confrontation. The warehouse was a cacophony of chaos. Marcus lay on the ground, clutching his shoulder where Sarah's bullet had struck him. Blood seeped through his fingers, staining his tailored suit, but his face was a mask of cold fury rather than pain. The gun he'd been holding skidded across the floor, out of reach. Sarah stood frozen, her own gun still raised, her hands trembling so violently I thought she might drop it. David, Elena, and James were scattered around the room, their faces pale and their eyes wide with shock. The air was thick with tension, the kind that makes your skin crawl and your stomach churn. Marcus was the first to break the silence. He let out a low, bitter laugh, his voice dripping with venom. "You think this is over? You think you've won?" He coughed, blood flecking his lips, but his eyes never left mine. "You're even more naive than I thought." I took a step forward, my heart pounding so hard I could feel it in my throat. "It is over, Marcus. You're done. The police are on their way, and when they get here, you're going to spend the rest of your life in prison." He laughed again, a harsh, guttural sound that sent a chill down my spine. "Prison? You really think a little thing like prison can stop me? I own people in there. I own people everywhere. You're all dead. You just don't know it yet." Sarah's voice cut through the tension, sharp and shaky. "Shut up, Marcus. Just shut up. You're not in control anymore." Marcus turned his gaze to her, his lips curling into a sneer. "Oh, Sarah. Sweet, stupid Sarah. You always were too emotional for your own good. Do you really think shooting me changes anything? Do you think any of this changes anything?" I could see Sarah's resolve wavering, her hands trembling even more as she lowered the gun slightly. Marcus had always had a way of getting inside people's heads, of twisting their thoughts until they doubted everything. I couldn't let him do that to her. "Not now. Don't listen to him," I said, stepping between them. "He's just trying to mess with you. He's powerless now. He's nothing." Marcus's laugh was like a knife, cutting through the air. "Powerless? Nothing. Oh, my dear friend, you have no idea what I'm capable of. You think this little stun of yours is the end? This is just the beginning." I clench my fists, my nails digging into my palms. "You're finished, Marcus. You're not getting out of this." He tilted his head, his expression almost pitying. "You still don't get it, do you? This was never about me. This was about you. All of you. You think you're so clever, so righteous. But you're just pawns in a game you don't even understand." I felt a surge of anger, hot and blinding. "What the hell are you talking about?" He smiled, a cold, cruel smile that made my skin crawl. "The list. The names. The plan. You think it was real? You think I was actually going to kill you? Oh, my friend, you've been played from the very beginning." I froze, my mind racing. "What do you mean?" He leaned back against the wall, his breathing labored but his voice steady. "The list was a test. A way to see who I could trust, who would stand by me no matter what. And you failed. All of you failed." I shook my head, trying to make sense of his words. "You're lying. You're just trying to mess with us." He laughed again, a low, bitter sound. "Am I? Think about it. Why would I leave a list like that lying around? Why would I make it so easy for you to find? Because I wanted you to. I wanted to see what you would do. And you didn't disappoint." I felt a cold knot of dread forming in my stomach. "You're saying the list was fake?" He nodded, his smile widening. "Exactly. It was never real. It was a trap, a way to expose your true loyalty. And you walked right into it." I glanced at Sarah, David, Elena, and James, their faces pale and their eyes wide with shock. If Marcus was telling the truth, then everything we'd done, everything we'd risked, had been for nothing. We'd played right into his hands. But I couldn't let him win. "Not again. Even if that's true, it doesn't change anything. You're still a murderer. You're still a monster." His expression darkened, and for the first time, I saw a flicker of raw anger in his eyes. "A monster? You think I'm the monster? Look at yourselves. Look at what you've done. You're no better than me. Before I could respond, there was a loud bang, and Marcus crumpled to the ground. I turned to see Sarah holding the gun, her hands trembling, but her eyes filled with determination. It's over, she said, her voice shaking. It's finally over. As the police arrived and took Marcus away, I felt a strange mix of relief and sadness. The nightmare was over, but the scars would remain. Marcus had betrayed us, manipulated us, and tried to destroy us. But in the end, we had outsmarted him. As I stood there, watching the flashing lights of the police cars, I couldn't help but wonder if we had really won. Marcus was gone, but the damage he had done would take a long time to heal. And as I looked at my friends, their faces pale and drawn, I knew that none of us would ever be the same. But we had survived. And for now, that was enough. Chapter 6, The Aftermath. The days following Marcus's arrest were a blur of police interviews, media scrutiny, and sleepless nights. The warehouse incident had made headlines, and the story of Marcus Reynolds, the once-respected businessman turned would-be killer, was everywhere. Reporters camped outside my apartment, shouting questions every time I stepped outside. My phone buzzed incessantly with calls from journalists, old acquaintances, and even strangers who claimed to have information about Marcus. It was overwhelming, suffocating, and I couldn't escape it. But the worst part wasn't the attention. It was the doubt. Marcus's words in the warehouse haunted me, replaying in my mind like a broken record. The list was a test. A way to see who I could trust. Was it possible? Had everything we'd done, the planning, the risks, the violence, been part of some twisted game? Had Marcus been playing us all along? I tried to push the thought aside, to focus on the fact that Marcus was behind bars and we were safe. But the doubt lingered, gnawing at the edges of my mind. I needed answers, and I wasn't going to find them sitting in my apartment, staring at the walls. I decided to start with Sarah. She'd been the one to pull the trigger, the one who'd finally stopped Marcus. If anyone could help me make sense of everything, it was her. I called her, and she agreed to meet me at a quiet park on the outskirts of town. It was a gray, overcast day, the kind of day that felt like it matched my mood. Sarah was already there when I arrived, sitting on a bench with a cup of coffee in her hands. She looked tired, her face pale, and her eyes shadowed. She didn't smile when she saw me, just nodded and gestured for me to sit down. How are you holding up? I asked, my voice tentative. She shrugged, staring into her coffee. I don't know. I keep replaying it in my head, you know? The look on his face when she trailed off, her hands trembling slightly. I reached out and placed a hand on her shoulder. You did what you had to do. You saved us. She shook her head, her eyes filling with tears. Did I? Or did I just play right into his hands? What if he was telling the truth? What if the list was fake? And we just fell for it. I felt a pang of guilt. I'd been asking myself the same questions, but hearing Sarah say them out loud made it all feel more real. I don't know, I admitted. But even if the list was fake, Marcus was still dangerous. He was still a threat. We did what we had to do to protect ourselves. She nodded, but I could tell she wasn't convinced. We sat in silence for a while, the weight of everything hanging heavy between us. Finally, she spoke. What happens now? What do we do? I sighed, running a hand through my hair. I don't know, but I think we need to find out the truth. About Marcus, about the list, about everything. We can't just let this go. She looked at me, her eyes searching mine. And how do we do that? We start by talking to the others, I said. David, Elena, James. They were part of this too. Maybe together, we can figure out what really happened. Later that day, I reached out to David, Elena, and James, arranging a meeting at my apartment. It was the first time we'd all been together since the warehouse, and the atmosphere was tense. David looked like he hadn't slept in days, his face drawn and his eyes bloodshot. Elena was as sharp and focused as ever, but there was a hardness in her eyes that hadn't been there before. James was quiet, his usual brash demeanor replaced by a brooding silence. I filled them in on my conversation with Sarah, and the doubts that had been plaguing me. Marcus said the list was a test, I said, my voice low. A way to see who he could trust. If that's true, then everything we did, it was all part of his plan. David shook his head, his expression grim. It doesn't matter. Marcus is a liar. He's always been a liar. You can't trust anything he says. But what if he's telling the truth? Elena asked, her voice sharp. What if we just played right into his hands? James leaned forward, his eyes narrowing. Does it matter? Marcus is in jail. He's not a threat anymore. Why are we still talking about this? Because we need to know, I said, my voice rising slightly. We need to know if we did the right thing, or if we just made everything worse. There was a long silence as everyone processed my words. Finally, Elena spoke. All right, let's say the list was fake. Let's say Marcus was testing us. What does that change? He's still a criminal. He's still dangerous. We did what we had to do. But what if there's more to it? I asked, my mind racing. What if Marcus was working with someone else? What if this isn't over? David frowned, his brow furrowing. What are you saying? I took a deep breath, trying to put my thoughts into words. Marcus was always one step ahead of us. He knew what we were going to do before we did it. What if he had help? What if there's someone else out there, someone we don't know about? The room fell silent as the weight of my words sank in. If Marcus had been working with someone else, then we weren't safe. Not yet. So what do we do? Sarah asked, her voice trembling slightly. We dig deeper, I said, my voice firm. We find out who Marcus was working with, and we take them down. We can't stop now. Not until we're sure it's over. Over the next few days, we threw ourselves into the investigation. Elena used her connections as a journalist to dig into Marcus's past, looking for any signs of accomplices or hidden alliances. James used his skills as a private investigator to track down leads, following the money and the connections that Marcus had left behind. David and Sarah focused on Marcus's business dealings, looking for any irregularities or red flags. I took on the role of coordinator, piecing together the information we gathered and looking for patterns. It was exhausting, frustrating work, but we were making progress. Slowly, a picture began to emerge. A picture of a man who had been far more dangerous and far more connected than any of us had realized. Marcus hadn't been working alone. He'd been part of a network, a web of corruption and violence that stretched far beyond what we'd imagined. And if we were going to take it down, we were going to need more than just the five of us. But as I sat in my apartment late one night, staring at the wall of evidence we'd gathered, I couldn't shake the feeling that we were still missing something. Marcus had been a master manipulator, a man who always had a backup plan. If we were going to win this, we were going to have to be smarter, more ruthless, and more determined than he ever was. Because if we weren't, we were as good as dead. Chapter 7, The Truth. The deeper we dug into Marcus's world, the darker it became. What started as a search for answers quickly spiraled into a labyrinth of lies, corruption, and violence. Every lead we followed seemed to branch off into a dozen more, each one more twisted than the last. It was like peeling back the layers of an onion, only to find that the core was rotten. Elena's journalistic instincts proved invaluable. She uncovered a trail of shell companies and offshore accounts, all tied to Marcus. These weren't just random businesses. They were fronts for something much bigger. Money laundering, drug trafficking, even human smuggling. Marcus hadn't just been a businessman. He'd been a kingpin, operating in the shadows while maintaining his pristine public image. James, with his connections in the underworld, managed to track down a few of Marcus's former associates. Most of them were too scared to talk, but one, a low-level enforcer named Rico, was willing to spill what he knew in exchange for protection. We met him in a dingy motel on the edge of town, the kind of place where people went to disappear. Rico was a wiry man with a face like a weasel and eyes that darted around the room like he was expecting a knife in his back at any moment. He sat on the edge of the bed, smoking a cigarette and looking at us like we were the ones who should be scared of him. "You're playing with fire, you know that?" he said, blowing a cloud of smoke into the air. Marcus wasn't just some guy. He was connected. "You mess with him, you mess with them." "Them?" I asked, leaning forward. "Who's them?" Rico smirked, tapping the ash off his cigarette. "You really don't know, do you? Marcus was just the tip of the iceberg. There's a whole network out there, people who make Marcus look like small time. And they don't take kindly to folks poking around in their business." I exchanged a glance with Elena, who was sitting next to me, her notebook open and her pen poised. "Who are they?" she asked, her voice calm but firm. Rico shook his head. "I don't know names. Nobody does. That's how they operate. But I'll tell you this, if you keep digging, they're gonna come for you. And when they do, you're gonna wish you'd left well enough alone." I felt a chill run down my spine, but I couldn't back down now. "What can you tell us about Marcus? What was he involved in?" Rico took a long drag on his cigarette, his eyes narrowing. "Marcus was a fixer. He made problems go away. If someone needed something done, money moved, evidence destroyed, people silenced. Marcus was the guy. But he wasn't working alone. He had partners, people who gave him orders. And if you think he was dangerous, you haven't seen anything yet. Do you know who these partners are? Elena asked, her pen hovering over her notebook. Rico shook his head. Like I said, I don't know names. But I know this. Marcus was just a cog in the machine. You take him out, they'll just replace him. And they'll make sure you don't cause any more trouble. The room fell silent as we processed his words. If Rico was telling the truth, then Marcus had been part of something much bigger, something far more dangerous than we'd realized. And if we kept pushing, we were going to find ourselves in way over our heads. Later that night, we gathered at my apartment to go over what we'd learned. The mood was tense, the weight of Rico's warning hanging heavy in the air. David was pacing back and forth, his face pale and his hands clenched into fists. Sarah was sitting on the couch, her arms wrapped around herself like she was trying to hold herself together. James was leaning against the wall, his expression grim. Elena was the only one who seemed calm, her eyes focused as she flipped through her notes. "So, what do we do now?" David asked, his voice tight with frustration. "If Marcus was just a small part of something bigger, then we're screwed. We can't take on an entire network by ourselves." "We don't have a choice," I said, my voice firm. "If we back down now, they'll come after us anyway. We've already made too much noise. They're not just going to let us walk away." "He's right," Elena said, looking up from her notes. "If what Rico said is true, then we're already targets. Our only chance is to keep pushing, to expose as much as we can before they can stop us." James nodded, his expression dark. "And if they come after us, we'll be ready. We're not just going to roll over and die." Sarah looked up, her eyes filled with fear. "But what if we can't stop them? What if we're just making things worse?" I walked over and sat down next to her, placing a hand on her shoulder. "We can't think like that. We have to believe that we can do this. Otherwise, what's the point?" She nodded, but I could see the doubt in her eyes. None of us were sure we could win this, but we didn't have a choice. We were in too deep to turn back now. Over the next few days, we threw ourselves into the investigation with renewed determination. Elena used her connections to dig deeper into Marcus's network, uncovering more shell companies and offshore accounts. James tracked down more of Marcus's associates, squeezing them for information. David and Sarah focused on Marcus's business dealings, looking for any irregularities or red flags. I took on the role of coordinator, piecing together the information we gathered and looking for patterns. It was exhausting, frustrating work, but we were making progress. Slowly, a picture began to emerge, a picture of a network that was far more extensive and far more dangerous than we'd imagined. But as we dug deeper, the risks grew higher. One of James's contacts turned up dead, his body dumped in an alley with a bullet in his head. Elena received a threatening letter in the mail, warning her to back off or face the consequences. David's apartment was broken into, his computer stolen, and his files ransacked. It was clear that we were getting too close, and someone didn't like it. One night, as I sat in my apartment going over the latest batch of information, there was a knock at the door. I froze, my heart pounding. It was late, too late for visitors. I grabbed the gun I kept in the drawer and approached the door cautiously, peering through the peephole. It was Sarah. She looked pale and shaken, her eyes wide with fear. I opened the door, and she practically fell into my arms. "They're watching me," she said, her voice trembling. "I saw them outside my house. Two men in a black car. They just sat there, staring at me." I pulled her inside and locked the door behind her, my mind racing. If they were watching Sarah, then they were probably watching all of us. We were running out of time. "We need to move," I said, my voice low. "We can't stay here. It's not safe." She nodded, her eyes filled with fear. "Where do we go?" I didn't have an answer. We were in over our heads, and the walls were closing in. But I knew one thing, we couldn't stop now. We had to keep pushing, no matter the cost. Because if we didn't, we were as good as dead. Chapter 8, The Final Showdown. The night Sarah showed up at my apartment, shaking and terrified, was the night I realized we were out of options. The network Marcus had been part of, the shadowy, nameless entity that had been pulling the strings, was closing in on us. They knew we were digging, and they weren't going to let us expose them. We had two choices, run or fight. And running wasn't an option. Not anymore. We gathered at a safe house James had arranged, an old, abandoned cabin deep in the woods. It was cold, damp, and smelled of mildew, but it was off the grid, and that was all that mattered. Sarah, David, Elena, James, and I sat around a rickety table, the dim light of a single bulb casting long shadows on the walls. The atmosphere was tense, the kind of tension that makes your skin crawl and your stomach churn. "We need to end this," I said, breaking the silence. "We can't keep running. They'll find us eventually. We have to take them down before they take us down." David slammed his fist on the table, his face pale and his eyes bloodshot. "And how the hell are we supposed to do that? We don't even know who they are." "We know enough," Elena said, her voice calm but firm. She spread out a stack of papers on the table, each one filled with notes, diagrams, and connections we'd uncovered. "We know how they operate. We know their methods. And we know they're scared. Otherwise, they wouldn't be coming after us." James leaned forward, his expression grim. "Elena's right. They're scared because we're close. If we can just push a little harder, we can bring the whole thing crashing down." Sarah wrapped her arms around herself, her voice trembling. "But what if we can't? What if we're just making things worse?" I reached out and placed a hand on her shoulder, trying to steady her. "We don't have a choice, Sarah. If we don't do this, they'll kill us. Or worse, they'll make us disappear. We have to fight." She nodded, but I could see the fear in her eyes. None of us were sure we could win this, but we didn't have a choice. We were in too deep to turn back now. The plan was simple, at least on paper. We would use the information we'd gathered to lure the network into a trap. Elena had uncovered a meeting between some of Marcus's former associates, a gathering that was supposed to be off the books. If we could intercept that meeting, we could catch them in the act and expose the whole operation. But executing the plan was anything but simple. The meeting was taking place in an old warehouse on the outskirts of town, the same warehouse where we'd confronted Marcus. It was isolated, quiet, and far enough from prying eyes to give us the privacy we needed. But it was also dangerous. If anything went wrong, we'd be trapped with no way out. We spent the next few days preparing, gathering supplies, and going over the plan again and again. James managed to get his hands on some weapons, just in case things went south. Elena worked on hacking into the network's communications, trying to gather as much information as possible. David and Sarah focused on setting up the equipment we'd need to record the meeting, ensuring that every angle was covered. I took on the role of coordinator, piecing together the information we gathered and looking for patterns. It was exhausting, frustrating work, but we were making progress. Slowly, a picture began to emerge, a picture of a network that was far more extensive and far more dangerous than we'd imagined. The night of the meeting, we arrived at the warehouse early, our nerves frayed and our hearts pounding. We set up hidden cameras and microphones, ensuring that every angle was covered. If the network said or did anything incriminating, we would have it on record. We took our positions, hiding in the shadows as we waited for the meeting to begin. The minutes dragged by, each one feeling like an eternity. My heart pounded in my chest, and I could feel the sweat trickling down my back. I kept replaying the plan in my head, trying to anticipate every possible outcome. But no matter how many times I went over it, I couldn't shake the feeling that something was going to go wrong. Finally, the sound of car engines broke the silence. I peered through a crack in the wall, watching as a convoy of black SUVs pulled up to the warehouse. Men in dark suits stepped out, their faces obscured by sunglasses and hats. They moved with precision, their movements calm and deliberate, like they'd done this 1,000 times before. I felt a surge of fear as I watched them. These weren't just thugs or enforcers. These were professionals, the kind of people who didn't make mistakes. If we were going to pull this off, we were going to have to be perfect. The men entered the warehouse, their footsteps echoing in the empty space. They gathered in the center of the room, their voices low and their expressions grim. I couldn't make out what they were saying, but I didn't need to. The cameras were rolling, capturing every word. For a moment, everything seemed to be going according to plan. But then, one of the men turned, his eyes scanning the room. He said something to the others, and they all turned, their expressions darkening. I felt a chill run down my spine. They knew. They knew we were here. Before I could react, there was a loud bang, and the lights in the warehouse went out. The room was plunged into darkness, the only sound the frantic shuffling of feet and the low murmur of voices. "They're here," someone shouted, their voice filled with panic. I heard the sound of gunfire, the sharp crack of bullets echoing through the warehouse. I dropped to the ground, my heart pounding as I tried to make sense of what was happening. The plan had fallen apart, and we were in the middle of a war zone. I crawled through the darkness, my hands scraping against the rough concrete floor. I could hear the others shouting, their voices filled with fear and desperation. I needed to find them, to get us out of here before it was too late. But before I could reach them, there was a loud bang, and the world went black. When I came to, I was lying on the ground, my head pounding and my vision blurry. The warehouse was quiet, the only sound the faint hum of the fluorescent lights flickering above me. I tried to sit up, but a sharp pain in my side made me gasp. I looked around, my heart sinking as I realized what had happened. The warehouse was a mess, the walls riddled with bullet holes, and the floor littered with debris. The network's men were gone, but so were my friends. I struggled to my feet, my mind racing. Where were they? What had happened? I needed to find them, to make sure they were okay. But as I stumbled through the wreckage, I realized the truth. They were gone. Taken. And if I didn't do something, they were as good as dead. The final showdown was over, but the fight was far from finished. The network had taken my friends, and I was the only one left to stop them. But I wasn't going to give up. Not now. Not ever. Because if I did, we were all as good as dead. Chapter 9, The End. The warehouse was a graveyard. The air was thick with the acrid smell of gunpowder and blood, the silence broken only by the faint hum of flickering fluorescent lights. I stumbled through the wreckage, my head pounding and my vision blurred. Every step sent a sharp pain shooting through my side, but I couldn't stop. Not now. Not when my friends were gone. Sarah, David, Elena, James, they'd been taken. The network had them, and if I didn't act fast, they were as good as dead. I didn't know how much time I had, but I knew one thing. I wasn't going to let them win. Not after everything we'd been through. Not after everything Marcus had put us through. I found my phone lying in the debris, the screen cracked, but still functional. I dialed the only number I could think of, Elena's contact at the police department, a detective named Harris who'd helped us before. He picked up on the second ring, his voice tense. "This is Harris." "It's me," I said, my voice hoarse. "They took them. The network. They took my friends." There was a pause, and I could hear Harris exhale sharply. "Where are you?" "The warehouse. The one on the outskirts of town. You need to get here. Now." "I'm on my way," he said, and the line went dead. I slumped against the wall, my legs trembling as I tried to catch my breath. My mind was racing, trying to piece together what had happened. The network had been one step ahead of us the whole time. They'd known we were coming, and they'd set a trap. And we'd walked right into it. But how? How had they known? Unless. The thought hit me like a punch to the gut. Unless someone had tipped them off. Unless one of us had betrayed the others. I shook my head, trying to push the thought aside. It couldn't be true. It couldn't. But the doubt lingered, gnawing at the edges of my mind. Marcus had always said trust was a weakness, and now I was starting to see why. Harris arrived within the hour, his face grim as he surveyed the scene. He didn't say much, just nodded as I filled him in on what had happened. When I was done, he ran a hand over his face and sighed. "This is bad," he said. "Really bad. If the network has your friends, they're not going to let them go. Not alive." "I know," I said, my voice tight. "That's why we need to find them. Fast." Harris nodded, his expression darkening. "We'll do what we can, but this isn't just some small-time operation. These people are connected, and they're dangerous. If we go after them, we're going to need more than just a few cops and a hunch." "What are you saying?" I asked, my heart sinking. "I'm saying we need evidence," he said. "Hard evidence. Something we can use to bring them down. Otherwise, we're just spinning our wheels." I clenched my fists, my nails digging into my palms. "We don't have time for that. They could be killing my friends right now." Harris placed a hand on my shoulder, his grip firm. "I get it. I do. But if we go in blind, we're just going to get ourselves killed. We need to be smart about this." I wanted to argue, to scream at him that we didn't have time to be smart. But deep down, I knew he was right. If we were going to win this, we were going to have to outsmart the network at their own game. Over the next few hours, Harris and I worked together to piece together what we knew. We combed through the evidence we'd gathered, looking for any clues that might lead us to the network's hideout. It was slow, frustrating work, but we were making progress. Elena's notes proved invaluable. She'd uncovered a trail of shell companies and offshore accounts, all tied to the network. We traced the money to a series of properties scattered across the city, each one a potential hiding place for my friends. But the most promising lead came from James's contacts. One of his informants had mentioned a name, Victor Kane. He was a high-ranking member of the network, someone who'd been involved in Marcus's operations. If we could find him, we could find my friends. The problem was, Victor Kane wasn't the kind of guy who just showed up at your doorstep. He was a ghost, a shadowy figure who operated in the background, pulling the strings. But if we could lure him out, we might have a chance. The plan was risky, but it was the only one we had. We would use the information we'd gathered to set a trap, to draw Victor Kane out into the open. It was a long shot, but it was the best we could do. We chose an abandoned factory on the edge of town as the location for the trap. It was isolated, quiet, and far enough from prying eyes to give us the privacy we needed. We set up hidden cameras and microphones, ensuring that every angle was covered. If Victor Kane showed up, we would have him on record. The night of the trap, I arrived early, my nerves frayed and my heart pounding. Harris was already there, his face grim as he checked the equipment one last time. We didn't speak much, the weight of what we were about to do hanging heavy in the air. As the minutes dragged by, I couldn't shake the feeling that something was going to go wrong. The network had been one step ahead of us the whole time, and there was no reason to think that had changed. But we didn't have a choice. We had to try. Finally, the sound of car engines broke the silence. I peered through a crack in the wall, watching as a convoy of black SUVs pulled up to the factory. Men in dark suits stepped out, their faces obscured by sunglasses and hats. They moved with precision, their movements calm and deliberate, like they'd done this a thousand times before. And then I saw him, Victor Kane. He was tall, with a lean, athletic build and a face that looked like it had been carved from stone. He exuded power, his presence commanding as he stepped out of the car and surveyed the scene. I felt a surge of adrenaline as I watched him. This was it. This was our chance. The trap was set. Harris and I moved into position, our weapons drawn as we prepared to confront Victor Kane. But before we could make our move, there was a loud bang, and the lights in the factory went out. The room was plunged into darkness, the only sound the frantic shuffling of feet and the low murmur of voices. "They're here," someone shouted, their voice filled with panic. I heard the sound of gunfire, the sharp crack of bullets echoing through the factory. I dropped to the ground, my heart pounding as I tried to make sense of what was happening. The plan had fallen apart, and we were in the middle of a war zone. I crawled through the darkness, my hands scraping against the rough concrete floor. I could hear Harris shouting, his voice filled with fear and desperation. I needed to find him, to get us out of here before it was too late. But before I could reach him, there was a loud bang, and the world went black. When I came to, I was lying on the ground, my head pounding and my vision blurry. The factory was quiet, the only sound the faint hum of the fluorescent lights flickering above me. I tried to sit up, but a sharp pain in my side made me gasp. I looked around, my heart sinking as I realized what had happened. The factory was a mess, the walls riddled with bullet holes, and the floor littered with debris. Victor Kane and his men were gone, but so was Harris. The end. I struggled to my feet, my mind racing. Where was he? What had happened? I needed to find him, to make sure he was okay. But as I stumbled through the wreckage, I realized the truth. He was gone. Taken. And if I didn't do something, he was as good as dead. The final showdown was over, but the fight was far from finished. The network had taken my friends, and I was the only one left to stop them. But I wasn't going to give up. Not now. Not ever. Because if I did, we were all as good as dead. I spent the next few days in a haze, my mind consumed by thoughts of revenge and redemption. I knew I couldn't take on the network alone, but I also knew I couldn't trust anyone else. Not after everything that had happened. I reached out to the only person I could think of, Rico, the low-level enforcer who'd helped us before. He was reluctant at first, but when I told him what had happened, he agreed to meet me. We met in the same dingy motel where we'd spoken before, the air thick with the smell of cigarette smoke and desperation. Rico looked worse than I remembered, his face gaunt and his eyes hollow. "You're in deep," he said, lighting a cigarette. "Deeper than you realize. If you keep pushing, they're gonna kill you." "They're going to kill me anyway," I said, my voice steady. "But if I'm going down, I'm taking them with me." Rico studied me for a long moment, then nodded. "All right, I'll help you. But it's gonna cost you. Name your price," I said, my heart pounding. He leaned forward, his eyes narrowing. "I want out. I want a new life, somewhere far away from all this. You get me that, and I'll give you everything I've got. I nodded, my mind racing. It was a risky deal, but it was the only one I had. Done. With Rico's help, I was able to piece together the final pieces of the puzzle. He gave me names, locations, and details about the network's operations. It was enough to bring them down, but it was also enough to get me killed. I spent the next few weeks gathering evidence, working tirelessly to build a case against the network. It was dangerous, exhausting work, but I didn't care. I was driven by a single purpose, to bring them down, no matter the cost. Finally, the day came. I handed over the evidence to Harris, who'd managed to escape the network's clutches and was now working with me to bring them down. We coordinated with the authorities, setting up a massive operation to take the network out once and for all. The raid was a blur of chaos and violence. The network fought back, but they were outnumbered and outgunned. In the end, they were no match for the combined forces of the police, the FBI, and every other agency we'd managed to bring on board. Victor Kane was arrested, along with dozens of other high-ranking members of the network. The evidence we'd gathered was enough to put them away for life, and the network was dismantled piece by piece. But the victory came at a cost. Harris was killed in the raid, his body riddled with bullets as he tried to protect me. Rico disappeared, his fate unknown. And my friends were never found. In the aftermath, I was left with nothing but the memories of what had happened. The network was gone, but so were the people I'd fought to save. I'd won, but it didn't feel like a victory. I stood at the edge of the city, looking out at the skyline as the sun set. The world felt quieter now, but it also felt emptier. I'd lost so much, but I'd also gained something, a sense of purpose, a determination to keep fighting, no matter what. Because in the end, that's all we can do. We fight, we survive, and we hope that someday the scars will heal. But for now, the fight is over, and I'm still here.